This is bookcareers.com live, the podcast about careers in book publishing for people who are looking for a job, building a career, or who want to do their current job better. I'm your host, Suzanne Collier, the founder of bookcareers.com, and it's my job to solve career problems relating to the book world. Hello and welcome to episode 135 of bookcareers.com live. As you probably know, we've just finished the data gathering stage of our bookcareers.com salary survey 2021. And what I thought would be really good is in the comments, we always ask if you want to suggest extra questions. And we all always note any other comments about the structure of the questions too. So I thought in this episode of Book Careers Live, we'll go through some of your questions about our questions and also give you a little bit of background about how we analyse your data. So the first thing is that we have approximately 200 live established job titles within the survey. And then we ask you if you have another job title. So if your job title doesn't fit into one of the 200, you could type in your job title word for word. Now, I made a mistake this year, which is when I was alphabetizing and adding in some new job titles, I missed off the job title assistant editor. That is completely my fault. And we've got approximately 25 assistant editors, which I've pulled out from the 200 plus other job titles that were mentioned. And the first stage within the analysis of the salary survey is to go through those extra other job titles, look for any commonalities. Sometimes I appreciate your scanning through. This is why we really try and keep it in strict alphabetical order. You're scanning through and you don't see your job title, so you add it at the bottom. And I'd say probably about 15-20 people have missed their job titles, and we go back and we click the box for them. Then there are those where we look at your job titles. So say we've got development editor on our list, but you've added a job title developmental editor. What we do is we compare the developmental editor salary with the initial averages of those who've said they're a development editor. And then we look at our core skills checkboxes, which I'll come to in a minute. And if that developmental editor is within that salary band for development editor, we will add it to the development editors, but we will keep the actual job title listed in our other category, so that if we're doing any salary banding, any salary benchmarking for publishers, we can really see where things are based, where you know that somebody's actually got a slightly different survey salary. Now, the core skills, I get so much criticism about the core skills because it's comments, these are outdated, they're not relevant. Now, what they actually are and how they are used is they're only used in the purpose of analysing where somebody who's put an other job title is actually doing the basics of the same job of a job title that someone has ticked. So it's unlikely to be completely up to date with the latest skills. And it's very, very relevant, however, to those who are doing the core skills of the job. And that enables me to pick up, I'd say, out of those, I think there's 233 other job titles through that looking and reflecting on where people fit in the salary bands, I could probably get that down to about 75 other job titles or even less. It really depends what changes are happening within the industry as regards job titles. So, for example, a new job title, say within the last 5 years, has been brand manager. And if that wasn't on our core list of job titles, but appears in our other job titles about five times, we will automatically list it in our core job titles for the 2025 survey. Yes, and I'm already talking about the 2025 survey, even though I always swear I'll never do another salary survey again. I haven't got to that point at this moment in time, and I'm actually really enjoying the analysis process, which is brilliant, because there is always a time that I start cursing and calling it, you know, B survey, salary survey, and swearing that I'll never do it again. And I haven't yet reached that point, which I'm actually finding quite refreshing. But what we do is I go through these comments, and you'll see as I continue this discussion today, is I take into your comments about the structure of questions and whether we review whether we need to restructure some of the questions. One of the questions asked of us was, you have like a 21 to 25 age group, you have a 26 to 31 age group, you have a 31 to, you know, and but then we great put everybody between 36 to 51 in one age group. Now, it might surprise you to know that within this survey this year and concurrent with other surveys we've done, the 36 to 51 age group is 20% on average of respondents, which is the same yield as the 24 to 26 age group, the 27 to 30 age group, and the 31 to 35 age group. So, but we will consider breaking that down into two age groups, perhaps 36 to 41 and 42 to 51. But what we've found through our analysis over the last 25 years of performing this survey is that the majority of career progression and salary increase happens between the ages of your first job to age 36 on average. But we will definitely consider putting in and breaking down this age group further. I had a few comments about sexuality, and we had a huge discussion about it. I discussed it with Stonewall, and Stonewall, I went on some Stonewall training kindly provided by the IPG at one of their conferences, and it was something that came up, and Stonewall said, you must ask about sexuality. Now, in recent years, we've dropped the question about marital status, because I always felt that marital status was an intrusion. And I asked people's opinions, and I spoke to Pride in Publishing, and they tended to agree with me that asking questions about sexuality is a question too far. It's, whilst it might be interesting if certain people within LGBTQ are plus are, you know, getting paid slightly different salaries, you know, if they're actually being discriminated against, I do feel that asking questions about sexuality is a question too far. We might review it again for 2025, but at this moment, sexuality is not a question that we intend to ask. Now, some of the other questions that have been asked is whether future surveys could collect data about parental leave and pay. Now, one of the things that we've noticed, and one of the things we always go back to the publishing employers and tell them, that over the years we have noticed that there is a complete lack of knowledge from employees about the benefits that are on offer to them from their employers. So we always tell the employers and their HR and their benefits departments to look, you really have to work harder to tell your employees about what benefits they're entitled to. Now, it could be that we could add in a question about parental leave and pay in addition to the data we already collect about benefits. But we'll review that nearer the time. One of our biggest issues, and one that we could just go on and on and on and ask you question after question after question. It already takes between 15 to 20 minutes to go through what is in fact about 76 questions on our survey. We really don't want it to take any longer time. Now, another question was, it would be interesting to find out where people are from, i.e. how many people from the north, how many people come from other countries and so on, or where their publishing jobs have been, how many outside London, for example. Now, that part of that could be included in the regional data that we collect about the location of your workplace. But it is something that we will consider for the next survey. Another question would be, that's been suggested, is could you ask some more questions about mid-level managers, about have they received management training, or how stressful in particular being a mid-manager job is. Now, we do ask stress questions that come from the original TUC survey about stress in the workplace, and we are able to monitor it. And it is about, you know, you're asked at the beginning, do you suffer from stress in the workplace? And if you tick yes, then you can go through all the different stressors, and we go through that. Somebody asked about if bullying was prevalent in publishing, and I'd say that it's, on previous surveys, I can't comment on any of the results this survey at all, is in previous surveys it's always been up to about 33% of people who said they were stressed in the workplace do feel that they're bullied to some extent. Now, someone is also asked a question about asking more about people's backgrounds, particularly around class and ethnicity, so that there's more information about who's getting ahead in publishing and whether there's a public pattern of behaviour in recruitment, retention, promotion of people from particular backgrounds. Well, we sort of be able to see that because we've broken down the ethnicity question, but we'll see how going forward whether that needs to be broken down anymore. With the number of publishers in opening regional offices, we will have to automatically restructure some of our questions so we can see whether we can incorporate anything. Something somebody commented on was, I've been made redundant from a previous publishing job within the last year. It might have been interesting to be asked questions about that, about whether you were made redundant from your previous job and that's why you were now in a new job. Now, somebody has commented, there are so few BAME people working in publishing. How are you going to keep this survey anonymous? Now, I don't know if you've, if this is your first time with the survey, if you've looked at what results we published previously. All we publish are tables of data, and most of that is group data. So it's the average of all BAME employees' salaries. So you won't be identified in that way. If you have a unique job title, and if there's less than, I think it's a standard we use is four people, there's less than four people in the industry with the same job title, we do highlight that there is not representative data. But if there's just, say, one or two people, we won't publish those salaries. We're really, really careful to protect your anonymity. And I can't tell you how I go, you know, how out of my way I go through. So there will be no identifying data. And just by the way that I've described your comment, I hope that gives you some reassurance that we just keep this as anonymous as possible. I go through, the comments that we receive, I think we've got over 100 and something comments already, and we've got comments about the diversity initiatives as well. We've got comments about why people want to stay in their jobs and why people want to leave their jobs. And one of the things I personally do is I could easily farm out those comments to an editor to say anonymize these, but what I actually do is I edit these personally before they, I wouldn't say they go anywhere else, but they are read through by Vanita. Vanita will be proofreading these comments, so I don't think she knows that yet, but I personally go through and I anonymize comments. Like someone has commented that I can't tell you how what a relief it is to not drink a particular drink in the office anymore because they've changed jobs. And what I will do is they've mentioned the name of their company, but they've also mentioned the name of a drink. So what I will do is not only will I remove the name of the company, but I will either remove the name of the drink or change the name of the drink so that it becomes non-identifying. Because if that drink is a unique drink to that company or that department, it is an identifying comment. And we cannot have any identifying comments because we do publish them. And I hope that really gives you some reassurance. There are other questions about we don't ask you to tick a box saying whether you're full-time or part-time. Usually we pick that up from your hours of work. That's what we do. We pick it up from your hours of work. And if you're part-time, usually, because I can see from the comments, you've commented whether your salary is pro rata or whether it's, an hourly based or a daily based. You've commented on that. What we usually do is through some of the average salaries, if you've ticked the box that you work less than 35 hours a week, your salary is not automatically included in the average overall salaries. Because you're actually, I think we only have about 5% or less of part-time employees completing this survey, and we'll review this for the next survey. I hope that answers some of the main questions. I've started the data analysis. I'm working through your job titles. I've gone through, the other question I always get asked is, why don't we include freelancers? Now, 1 year we did freelancers and we did booksellers, and I can't tell you what a nightmare that survey was, because to really publish representative data and to really analyse your data and clean it so that it really produces some meaningful results which the industry takes note of, we need to keep to our core salaried publishing employees and literary agents and publishing services. We need to keep to that core. The thing with the freelancers is that the CIEP keep freelance rates, the NUJ book branch and freelance branches keep freelance rates, the NUJ has, and I think CIEP also has a rate for the job, rate card, and there are now so many different areas of freelancing, whether it's social media, whether it's marketing, whether it's publicity, PR, whether it's, you know, the Society of Indexers keeps indexing rates. We really don't want to dilute the effectiveness of our survey. Now, I could consider doing a freelance survey, but as I've said at the beginning, that this is a mammoth task to analyse. It is extremely time consuming and it would need a lot of planning and a lot of funding, I think, to produce freelance rates or produce freelance, you know, information on freelancers, when perhaps most of you probably are aware that you're working long hours, you've got low pay, you've got publishers trying to beat you down to the lowest common denominator. I think we can all, you know, there's issues about training. I think we can all agree that freelancing for a lot of people isn't the money pot that it appears to be, you know, and there are some freelancers are doing very, very well, thank you, but there are some that are really struggling, and I think we're really aware of that. But it's what we do with the data, because how would that data actually impact change? You know, we can look at whether we can do something which would impact change, where the publishers suddenly say, yay, we're going to start paying our freelancers better, we're going to start treating our freelancers better. But in reality, do we think that would happen, or do we think that some publishers, not all, some publishers might actually say, well, we'll just go to somebody who's cheaper? And that is always the risk, but it is something that we can look at. I'm going to end this episode there. Thank you so much for listening to me today. If you're stuck, if you've got any comments or queries, my email, as always, is suzanne@bookcareers.com. Now it is your opportunity to join in the live discussion. You can find us across social media using the hashtag BookCareers, or on Twitter @BookCareers, or me personally, Suzanne Collier. Or visit our own platform at bookcareers.com/live. Thank you for listening. May you all be doing a job you love and being paid the salary that you so richly deserve.